He will be with you for the rest of the week. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the NRL Grand Final, both of them. I'll see you on Monday. Bye for now.
Hello, welcome to PM. I'm Annie Guest, coming to you from Turrbal and Yuggera lands in Brisbane. Tonight, Israel orders more people in Lebanon to flee their homes as the war in the Middle East intensifies. Also, Melania Trump's surprise stance on women's choice when it comes to reproductive rights. And NRL finals fever, passionate Penrith fans back in the Panthers for a fourth grand final.
This morning, my dad mentioned the game, and to my brother, ever since he's been born, like, they've been winning. I don't know why. He's like their lucky charm.
Israel has ordered more residents in southern Lebanon to flee their homes as it continues its ground incursions. The United Nations has described the situation in Lebanon as truly catastrophic, with more than 1 million people displaced in the past couple of weeks. Israel's Prime Minister has also vowed retaliation against Iran after it launched hundreds of missiles at Israel this week. It comes as the United States flags the possibility of Israeli strikes against Iranian oil facilities. And back home, leaders are urging any Australians to leave Lebanon immediately. Catherine Gregory reports.
27-year-old Lebanese man Jamil Hanna is about to get on a yacht to flee Lebanon's capital, Beirut.
I feel a little bit relieved because it has been a very, very long wait, but finally we're on board.
He normally works in France but came home about 2 weeks ago and has since experienced nightly bombings from Israel in the past week.
Normally I have this mentality of war and this kind of situations, but this time it escalated really, really fast.
Earlier this week, Israel also started its cross-border incursion into Lebanon's south, with 70 towns now under evacuation orders. Lebanese authorities say more than 1 million people have been displaced and nearly 2,000 people have been killed by Israeli attacks so far. The UN says the escalating conflict in the Middle East is catastrophic and peacekeepers are remaining in Lebanon's south despite Israel's request for them to vacate. Peacekeeping Chief Jean-Pierre Lacroix.
We hope for cessation of hostilities. What could be the role in that positive scenario? Obviously, we've been preparing several scenarios in case of deterioration.
Israel went on the offensive in Lebanon after almost a year of cross-border hostilities sparked by the war in Gaza, where there's still no ceasefire with Hamas or any progress towards rescuing the almost 100 hostages still in captivity or unaccounted for. Meanwhile, the death toll for Palestinians in Gaza continues to rise, above 41,500, according to local health officials. This Monday, October 7, marks the first anniversary of the Hamas attacks on Israel that killed almost 1,200 people and saw about 250 people taken into hostage in Gaza.
The only way to get the hostages back is to a deal.
Michael Levy's brother Orr is one of the hostages. His sister-in-law was killed by Hamas.
For those who call for a ceasefire and wants their Palestinian side to stop suffering, I'm between them, by the way. The only way to do it is to return the hostages and this war will end.
The anniversary is a point of contention here in Australia, with some pro-Palestinian groups planning protests for the weekend across the country. Police have issued a joint statement warning them against displaying symbols associated with terrorist groups at protests. And the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, gave this warning.
I say to others who are thinking of other actions on October 7, think about whether your cause is being advanced or set back.
Domestic political debate is also heating up over how to handle Iran, specifically Australia's Iranian ambassador, Ahmed Sadighi, who praised the slain Hezbollah leader as an unparalleled leader on social media. Opposition leader Peter Dutton is calling for his expulsion from Australia, while Anthony Albanese says it's important to maintain a relationship with Iran.
Australia has maintained a diplomatic relationship with Iran since 1968 that has been continuous. Not because we agree with the regime, but because it's in Australia's national interest.
Iran fired almost 200 missiles into Israel this week in retaliation for assassinating Hamas and Hezbollah leaders. The US says it will work with Israel to make sure Iran faces severe consequences. And President Joe Biden even discussed possible Israeli strikes on Iran's oil facilities. These comments alone have seen global oil prices rise. AMP Chief Economist Shane Oliver.
And so far it's all based on fear. Fear as to what might happen. So if things continue to deteriorate in the Middle East, then it could go a lot higher.
AMP Economist Shane Oliver. Ending that report by Catherine Gregory. A 21-year-old woman has been rescued from Gaza, where she was reportedly held captive for a decade. Fawzia Aminsaido was kidnapped by Islamic State in northern Iraq and sold to her captor in Gaza when she was 11 years old. The Iraqi and Israeli governments say she was rescued in a joint operation after her captor was killed during Israeli attacks on Gaza, and she's been reunited with her family in northern Iraq this week. Islamic State targeted thousands of people from the Yazidi religious minority in Iraq, using girls and young women as sex slaves and murdering men and older women. One woman who escaped with her family to Australia in 2014 has spoken to PM, and she's asked not to be identified for fear of retribution against her relatives in Iraq. Rana, what were your thoughts when you heard about the rescue of Fawzia Aminsaido?
I can't explain the feeling that I had. It was an amazing feeling. Seeing the mom, their moms, it's a beautiful feeling a person can have, like their community members come back, survive.
What do you know about what happened to Fawzia Aminsaido?
She was an 11-year-old child when she was kidnapped. She was kidnapped by ISIS and then we taken to Gaza. And I think her parents, her fathers and other family member were killed.
Did you know girls like Fawzia Aminsaido who were stolen to be sex slaves?
Yes. Yeah, I know. I had a couple of my friends and I have women who I did some work with them.
You're both from northern Iraq, and as a Yazidi person, you share the same cultural background, religion and ethnicity as Fawzia Aminsaido. When Islamic State terrorised your community, what happened to your life there?
So when we tried to flee, there was a shooting from all of the side. We don't know. It was ISIS shooting or like different groups of ISIS, they were shooting, or militias, they were shooting. So we escaped, and then other relative we know they were killed and used for slaving and stuff like that. So yeah,
some women have escaped, like Fawzia Aminsaido out of Gaza. Some of these women are now in Australia. How many Yazidi people are here and what support is needed for your traumatised community?
50,000 people, Yazidi people, I think, in Australia. Look, I don't know how to explain it. They do need that support, but also somehow it's mine help, somehow not, because they seen their family members still in Iraq and other countries, and they don't know when and what time they can be killed or they can be attacked, because living in that area, we are never going to be safe. So, like, it's more, I think, more support need to be done for the bringing their family or, like, stuff like that. So this is what I would say, like, we don't know what's going to happen to them tomorrow. As a different religion and culture, it's always been happening, and attacks, genocide to our community. And so this is one of the, we need more visa for the Yazidi community, because every time, always they are under attack. And the only safe, like, and us as a people here, we never feel happy or whatever. We always like going to be worried and scared every, we don't know when it's going to, what whatever's going to happen to them. And we always worried about their well-being and like their safety. We always are worried about it.
That's Iraqi-Australian woman Rana speaking to PM earlier. Melania Trump has shocked US election observers by suggesting she's pro-choice. It's a move at odds with her husband, former US President Donald Trump's position, after he overturned the country's federal abortion rights legislation during his time in office. But is this apparent about-face all part of a Trump strategy heading into November's election? Eliza Getzey reports.
Individual freedom is a fundamental principle that I safeguard.
It's not often we hear from Melania Trump on anything political, let alone a seemingly pro-choice stance when it comes to abortion.
Without a doubt, there is no room for compromise when it comes to this essential right that all women possess from birth. Individual freedom. What does my body, my choice really mean?
The former First Lady posted this short video to her ex account to promote her upcoming memoir. The Guardian reports that she writes in support of women's autonomy when it comes to having children, based on their own convictions, free from any intervention or pressure from the government. She also writes her belief in a woman's right to choose is one she's held throughout her adult life. Her husband and US presidential candidate Donald Trump has a different view. Back in 2022, he fulfilled an election promise of overturning the Roe v. Wade decision, which enshrined abortion rights in US federal law. Catherine Shoemaker is a senior lecturer in American Studies at the United States Studies Center. She says the timing of Melania's statements raises questions.
It's shocking. I think that this is not something that anyone saw coming. I think it's difficult to think that the timing of this is not an effort to affect the election in November.
Dr. Shoemaker says while abortion will be a big issue at a state level, it's not clear how that will translate to the presidential race. But she says it appears Republicans are trying to distance themselves from an unpopular policy. In a post on X this week, Donald Trump said he would veto a federal abortion ban. It's the first time he's explicitly said so after previously refusing to answer questions about it.
Everyone knows I would not support a federal abortion ban under any circumstances and would, in fact, veto it because it is up to the states to decide based on the will of their voters, the will of the people.
Catherine Shoemaker again.
What they're trying to do is to change the conversation. And what they're trying to say is that we aren't anti-abortion. As a general principle, we just want to return the issue to the states. And of course, that is very much obscuring what happened after the overturn of Roe versus Wade.
Donald Trump's running mate, J.D. Vance, known for his opposition to abortion rights, took great care during this week's vice presidential debate to avoid directly criticizing them.
I knew a lot of young women who had unplanned pregnancies and decided to terminate those pregnancies because they feel like they didn't have any other options. One of them is actually very dear to me, and I know she's watching tonight, and I love you. And she told me something a couple years ago that she felt like if she hadn't had that abortion, that it would have destroyed her life because she was in an abusive relationship. And I think that what I take from that as a Republican who proudly wants to protect innocent life in this country is that my party, we've got to do so much better of a job at earning the American people's trust back.
The national anti-abortion group SBA Pro-Life America denounced the former First Lady's views on abortion, but said its priority is to defeat Kamala Harris. Meanwhile, Alexis McGill-Johnson, the president and CEO of the Planned Parenthood Action Fund, said Melania Trump's defense of abortion rights was another example of the Trumps playing voters like a fiddle and urged them to read between the lines. Dr. Catherine Shoemaker says it's hard not to see it as a political move.
If it mattered this much to her that women have access to abortion care, that she would wait until October of 2024 to say something, especially since, you know, Donald Trump campaigned on overturning Roe v. Wade in 2016. He called for criminal prosecutions of women who have abortions. And then, of course, he called himself the most pro-life president ever and made a very big deal about appointing these Supreme Court justices. And Melania Trump never said anything.
Vice President Kamala Harris's camp has also reacted to Melania Trump's views. In a statement, a spokesperson said, sadly for the women across America, Mrs. Trump's husband firmly disagrees with her and is the reason that more than one in three American women live under a Trump abortion ban that threatens their health, their freedom and their lives.
Eliza Getzy. Being pregnant can be both stressful and exciting, but imagine having to worry about lead poisoning affecting your unborn baby. Port Pirie in South Australia is home to one of the world's biggest lead smelters, and tests have shown children there have higher than normal lead levels. Parents say they're carefully following advice to protect their children, but it's a big challenge. Annabelle Francis reports.
I've been really clean.
With three young children and another on the way, Adriana Porcelli's top priority is protecting her family from lead poisoning.
When they go outside, they've got to wear their Crocs or their slides.
That's because they live in Port Pirie in South Australia. It has one of the largest lead and multi-metal smelters in the world.
And then when they come back inside, they have to take their shoes off and come and wash their hands straight away. It's like non-negotiable before every meal, and they're just in a really good habit.
So Adriana Porcelli is working hard to prepare for her baby's arrival to make sure it won't be exposed to lead.
We've made sure that the air conditioner vents in that room, like throughout our whole house at the moment, it's winter, so they're shut and they all have cardboard on the other side just to make sure that the lead doesn't come through the air conditioner vents and into our home.
The most common cause of lead contamination is fine lead dust that settles in the town soil and around the homes. According to the World Health Organization, lead can affect the body in multiple ways. It's particularly harmful to young children and pregnant women because it's been linked to lower IQ and academic results, as well as a range of behavioural problems. Australian authorities say when the lead in a child's blood reaches more than 5 micrograms per decilitre, it should be investigated and reduced. The latest SA Health report found 2/3 of children under the age of 5 in Port Pirie had lead levels higher than that threshold. Another mother, Sophie Bucknell, is also taking measures to protect her children.
I moved from the UK in December 2018. And then I had my daughter in December 2022. Being a first-time mum is already difficult. And then when I fell pregnant, I was then told I needed lead tests, I needed to clean the house, I needed to have the carpets, curtains, sofa and bedding all professionally steam cleaned.
Sophie Bucknell says she's received helpful advice from a local health centre.
The Environmental Health Centre and TLAP are absolutely fantastic. They do everything they can. However, I think they're probably fighting a losing battle. I don't know what else can be done.
The lead smelter in Port Pirie has been operating for more than 130 years. But about 10 years ago, the smelters operated near Star and the SA government established the Targeted Lead Abatement Program, also known as TLAP. TLAP executive Peter Dolan says he isn't satisfied with the levels currently detected in Port Pirie's children.
We'll always be concerned when there's blood lead levels in children are too high, and they're still too high.
SA Health declined an interview and did not respond to specific questions about the parents' health concerns. But in a statement, it said a caseworker is provided to every pregnant woman to give advice on how to minimise exposure to lead dust. Dr. Cynthia Barlow has researched the relationship between elevated levels of lead in blood of children and their lives later on.
The outcome of this is that we've seen in studies that have tracked people later in life is that children who have been exposed to lead as children have lower socioeconomic outcomes later in life. So it basically, it holds them back in many ways throughout life.
That's Dr. Cynthia Barlow from Avondale University, and that report was from Annabelle Francis. This is PM. I'm Annie Guest. You can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. Ahead, the cyclist finishing a 14,000-kilometre ride for Indigenous literacy. If you struggle with hay fever, you may be in for a tough few months. An earlier and more intense grass pollen season is predicted across many parts of Australia. Isabel Masali reports.
You may think of hay fever as a runny nose and itchy eyes, but it can be far more dangerous for people like Kira Hughes, who also has allergic asthma.
I am one of the many Australians that are a potential victim from thunderstorm asthma. So thunderstorm asthma primarily affects people that suffer from hay fever and or asthma, and it can cause them to have really severe asthmatic-like symptoms during an event.
And you recently had further testing done on yourself. Tell me a bit about that experience.
Yes, yeah, so I got a skin prick allergy test done with an allergist and found out that my reaction to pollen is almost as severe as my reaction to nuts, which I have an EpiPen for, which was a big surprise to me. But it also goes to show how severe those reactions can be from pollen potentially.
But Kira Hughes knows her enemy well. She's a thunderstorm asthma researcher at Deakin University and works in pollen monitoring. She explains the condition is triggered when a high amount of allergens, mostly pollen, is met with certain storm conditions. While it's a relatively rare event, Victorians in particular need to be aware.
So we're basically the thunderstorm asthma capital of the world. So we are very prone to it, which is why it's important for us to make people aware of this potential hazard to their health.
One of the ways to raise awareness is through pollen monitoring systems. And for the next few months, authorities in Victoria are urging asthma and hay fever sufferers to check these services regularly because of a potential spike in risk.
We're measuring pollen levels in different areas across Victoria every day from October 1st to December 31st. And we use that data to help forecast what the levels will look like over the next coming days. And we also use that to predict the risk of a thunderstorm asthma event happening as well across different regions in Victoria.
Authorities say in Victoria, it's estimated 1 in 8 people have asthma and 1 in 4 have hay fever. The state's health minister, Mary Ann Thomas, says it's important those at risk speak with their GP soon to ensure they have a plan in place and all necessary medications and stay indoors during high-risk days.
Now, all of this work has been prompted, of course, by the devastating impact of the thunderstorm asthma event that we had here in Victoria back in 2016, where tragically 10 Victorians lost their lives and many thousands more experienced significant breathing difficulties on that day. We have learnt a lot of lessons since then, and importantly, I want to assure all Victorians that both our ambulance and hospital services are well placed to respond to any spike in demand that we might see.
The National Asthma Council says the best defence is developing good day-to-day control of your condition, such as having appropriate medication on hand. And today it's sending that message to people across Australia in light of pollen season forecasts. Air Health is behind several forecasting services and says there's potential for an earlier and challenging grass pollen season in Sydney, Canberra, Perth, Brisbane, Victoria and parts of Tasmania. Air Health's Dr. Edwin Lampugnani warns grass is a particular issue.
And this time of year in particular is the time of year that we need to be careful because grass is coming into flower. And grass, of course, is in those pasture lands where we grow cattle, sheep, etc. And so it's a feedstock, so there's lots of it around. And with the winds that we get, that will start coming into the city.
Daily forecasts can be monitored through pollen apps in your state.
Isabel Masali reporting. A cyclist is about to smash the record for travelling around Australia by bike. Lachlan Morton has almost finished his more than 14,000-kilometre loop of the country, overcoming obstacles from boiling heat to pelting rain. Alexandra Humphreys reports.
Lachlan Morton received a very warm welcome in Sydney. Cyclists of all ages joined him on part of his Sydney ride. 11-year-old Adrian Zhang says he's grateful to have had the chance to cycle with him.
Well, he's riding around Australia and it's a very good event for charity. It's very meaningful.
The charity Lachlan Morton is raising money for is the Indigenous Literacy Foundation.
They're an organisation doing, you know, amazing, incredible work, and to be able to have some sort of impact in the communities that we've been lucky enough to ride through, it feels nice.
He's expected to arrive back home in Port Macquarie on Saturday, and he says he's looking forward to that.
I've been enjoying the trip a lot. It's been incredibly challenging, but just the last 2 days, I finally feel like I'm ready to be done with riding a bike. So, yeah, I'm excited.
He says the mammoth journey hasn't come without challenges.
I had a couple. One up in the Pilbara when it was incredibly hot and I had a headwind and the road felt like it was made out of glue and I was stuck to it. And I wasn't sure how I was going to make it through that day and sort of did, but was on my hands and knees for a few hours afterwards. And then the road from Albany to Esperance, again, a really strong headwind, but rainy conditions. And it took, yeah, everything I had to make it to Esperance that night. And that's, yeah, a moment I won't forget for sure.
But those challenges don't appear to have slowed him down as far as records go. He's set to smash the current record of 37 days, 20 hours and 45 minutes set by Dave Alley in 2011. And at this rate, he's expected to beat it by at least 6 days. Lachlan Morton again.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to beat a record, but to be honest, this trip's sort of been a lot more than that. I've had an amazing crew with me and we've been able to share some pretty incredible highs and low lows together out in the road, as well as seeing parts of Australia I'd never seen before.
But he hasn't done it alone. Graham Sears is Lachlan's former coach and a long-term friend. He's also on his support team for the trip around Australia.
The support team's been with him from day one and we've been driving an RV van, looking after him and feeding him and giving him some logistics. There's been days when he's been pulled back reluctantly but there's been days when he's gone above and beyond.
But Lachlan Morton says he just takes each day as it comes.
You know, I'm happy, like, how I feel physically. I still have to get to Port, though. Even though everyone's like, you're basically there. And it's like, yeah, but still 500Ks. It's
far. Cyclist Lachlan Morton ending that report from Alexandra Humphreys and Ethan Ricks. In the rugby league, could the Penrith Panthers win a fourth straight premiership? Fans are gearing up for an epic grand final rematch of 2020 when Penrith lost to the Melbourne Storm. Rachel Hayter reports from Panthers Heartland.
At Penrith Panthers Leagues Club, fans pass through glass doors guarded by big black panther statues and head straight for the merchandise shop. An 11-year-old boy is clutching a wrapped package.
What have you got in your hand there?
It's a grand final T-shirt. My dad ordered it and, yeah, I'm thankful.
Who's your favourite player and why?
I can't choose, but it has to be between Dylan Edwards and Brian To'o.
And what's good about them?
Brian To'o because he's quirky and I like Dylan Edwards because he's, like, a really good fullback.
There are young girl fans here too.
I'm 9 and we were going to get the T-shirts, but they were too much money. But I kind of want to get all the merch. I decided we can just get the flag, so I'm pretty happy about that. I'm not really sure about the big game. I'm excited to see how they do.
We know that this team's won grand finals before, haven't they?
Mm-hmm. Quite a few times, and we've watched them quite often. Sometimes we do it on Saturdays, replacing, like, our movie that we sometimes watch for movie night.
And do you have a favourite player? And tell me why they're your favourite player.
I don't really have a favourite player. I quite like all of them.
We love Nathan, though, don't we?
Yeah.
Bonnie loves Nathan.
He really gets into the game. Like, he's really involved.
Why do you think this team is so good? They just keep winning. What's so good about them?
Well, this morning my dad mentioned the game and to my brother, ever since he's been born, like, they've been winning. I don't know why. He's like their lucky charm.
The Panthers are hopeful of securing their fourth straight premiership this Sunday night at Stadium Australia in Sydney against the Melbourne Storm, the last team to beat them in a grand final. This man thinks the rematch will work in Penrith's favour.
Feeling pretty confident, actually. I feel like the boys, based on the 2020 grand final, might get a little bit of revenge on Melbourne Storm. It's kind of weird because now we've gone 3 on the trot. I think used to it a little bit, so maybe it's a little bit cocky, but, you know, the community is really good. Get behind the boys and we're going to be there on Sunday.
What's so special about this team that they keep winning year after year? What makes them so good?
The gameplay. It's not only Nathan Cleary, it's all of them.
They know how to read each other.
The core of the team have been playing together since they were kids, so they really, really understand and know each other really well.
I think it's the brotherhood that they have between them, each other. Like, it's a great relationship to watch.
There's a special solidarity and confidence among Panthers fans that comes from being champions already.
They're all good players and they know the game.
I like the Panthers and I feel excited and fun. And I think they're going to win.
Go Panthers!
Go Panthers! Rawr!
Rachel Hayter with that report. And that's PM for this week. PM's supervising producer is David Sparks and today's producer is Kathleen Ferguson. Technical production by Lina Elsadi. I'm Annie Guest. Thanks for your company this week. Good night.
ABC News, I'm Sam Wilkinson. New South Wales Premier Chris Minns says plans by pro-Palestinian protesters to hold a Monday night vigil outside Sydney Town Hall are grossly insensitive. The Palestine Action Group and police have agreed about the route and behaviour required for a rally in Hyde Park on Sunday, but Mr Minns says approval has not been given for Monday's vigil. Mr Minns says police will ensure there's no repeat of last year's pro-Palestinian protest on the steps of the Opera House, and organisers have made it clear the vigil will be a static gathering.
But I want to make it clear that if that attempts to go mobile or walk through the streets or go through sensitive parts of Sydney in particular during a public holiday, during the school holidays, there'll be an overwhelming police response.
The Israeli military has told residents of around 20 more southern towns in Lebanon to evacuate immediately as it presses ahead with its incursions in the region. Earlier, Lebanon's transport minister said that an Israeli strike near the Masnah border crossing with Syria had cut off a road used by thousands of people fleeing Israeli bombardments. Israel accuses Hezbollah of smuggling weapons from Syria through the crossing, which Hezbollah has not commented on. This Lebanese resident says there's a lot of anxiety and fear across the country.
I mean, it's very difficult to cope. There is no real place that you can go where you can really find the rest away from this chaos.
The Foreign Minister, Penny Wong, has announced Qantas will run two flights free of charge from Cyprus for Australians who have fled Lebanon.